Hello, welcome to the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Dan Roth, and joining me this week is solo act Zach Bowman. What's going on, Zach?
All by myself. How's it going, Dan?
It is good. We are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of performance tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. So no matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. So we'll start right off with the Autoblog Garage, and I know you're driving your favorite stuff. So what you got?
I've got the CR-V all-wheel drive. You know, it's not bad. I like it some, you know, better than some of the other CR-Vs in the segment.
I liked this one a lot, and I thought it was the king of that particular segment. Although when the Escape got redone, I thought that it stood a really good chance of dethroning the CR-V.
I think Honda's always done a really good job of packaging their cars, you know, making the most out of the space that they have indoor. Well, with the exception of like the, you know, ZDX, but anyway, the rest of them, you know, make good use of the space that they have, and the CR-V is no different. The folding back seat, you know, everything folds more or less flat. Well, you've got two options. You can just sort of lean the front seats forward and have a little bit of space, or you can actually fold the front bench up and then fold the seat backs down. You have a whole lot of basically flat load surface. We still have 4 32-inch BFG all-terrains with wheels in the back with room to spare.
That's a lot of stuff. Those are big.
It was impressive. You could have probably done 6, I would say, comfortably. But I'm getting right at like 26 miles to the gallon. I think it's supposed to get like 31 highway, but it didn't really do any, really, you know, or 30 highway, I guess. So it really didn't get any long highway stints. That's pretty much dead on the EPA numbers.
Does this have leather and the fancy system that'll read you text messages and all that?
It has all of that. Like other Honda products, the infotainment system is so slow, and so there are, as one YouTube commenter pointed out, if I had, you know, $1 for every pixel on that screen, I would have $40 maybe. It's really bad.
Yeah, but here's the thing too.
Here's what cracks me up. All right, so it's got this safety function, right, where it comes up with the disclaimer screen.
Ugh.
And you have to push the continue button to say that you've read the disclaimer screen for it to then to function, right? And if you don't do this, the screen defaults to a black setting, right? So you can't see what's on the screen. So if you're rolling along and something comes on the satellite radio and you're like, wow, I wonder what band that is, let me just push the audio button here real quick and it'll tell me. Push the audio button, and then it will come up with the warning screen, right? So yeah. Then you have to push the continue button. When it takes a second, so you have to mash the continue button again, and then instead of taking you to the audio section, it takes you to the navigation section. So then you have to look to find the audio button again and push the audio button. So what should have taken half a second of your eyes off the road has devolved into this like complex system of negotiating with the freaking infotainment system to just give you the information you need. It's not safe. It's not helpful. It makes me so angry. Not as angry as other infotainment systems, but it's still dated, and I can't help but look at Chrysler every time I get into something like this, and I'm like, if Chrysler can do it, literally anybody can do it. And I don't mean that as a slight towards Chrysler, but that was a company that was seriously hard up for cash and pulled the sheets off of just a really fantastic connectivity system.
Yeah, no, it's like 4 or 5 years ago now.
Right.
You
right.
Connect's been good for a long time. I've never had a good system in a Honda. I was driving the brand new Accord with the high-end upgraded audio system. And I paired my phone with it. All was fine. Made a phone call. All was fine. Ended the phone call. Tried to use any other audio control, anything else, nothing. Nice. Nothing worked. I could not adjust the volume.
And again, that just seems like one of those things where did no one use this before it shipped?
It locked up, and then I had to stop. I was on the highway. I was driving it home from an Autoriter event. I had to pull off from my intended route, stop, shut the car off, turn it back on to restore functionality to this load of horse. Anyway,
right.
This is a brand new model with a brand new system in it, and it still feels like, and you know, it's with the Accord is like a screen down there and a screen up here and steering wheel controls, and you just
that's the other freaking thing. All right, so it's got the you know, small screen up in the dash that displays like vehicle information, fuel economy, and I don't know what else, and then below that you've got your infotainment screen, right? And nighttime rolls around, and you push the, you know, daytime, nighttime button on the screen, the infotainment screen, and it darkens. But the massive screen that's up by the windshield continues to just be like a thousand suns in your eyeballs.
Planet coming by.
It is. It totally is. And instead of like having like one of those just like rotary dials to the side of the steering wheel, like every other automaker, Honda makes you reach through the steering wheel to the gauge cluster, you know, where the trip reset button is, and then adjust it that way with your fingers.
It's got like a push button, right? And you always push one too many times, you're like bip 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 bip.
Oh my
bip. God. Oh.
How hard would it be just to link the navigation and the upper screen with one push button, everything dims appropriately? How hard is that?
Why so many screens, huh?
That's a good question as well. Do we need the other screen? No, we don't need the other screen. You're not telling me anything even remotely useful. It's just
no, they're just making the car like harder to use because you don't know which friggin' screen to look at and which one's a touch screen and which one has buttons arrayed around it, and just,
and like, I know it sounds like I'm just railing on the CRV, but I really did. I like the way it drives. It's only got a 5-speed automatic, but it doesn't matter because, you know, it's geared correctly. It's lowish on power. It feels sluggish until you really, really start hammering it. I mean, it's got 185 horsepower,
but it sounds good when you hammer it.
Yeah, well, you know, it sounds
a little smooth motor.
Yeah, it's smooth as can be. Cabin's quiet, seats are comfortable, crap tons of space in the back seat. It's a very grown up car. I mean, I look at the CRV of, well, my baseline for CRV is first generation CRV, which was just a weird super Japanese.
Oh, that was it was a little Civic wagon thing.
Yeah, Civiclet. And this is the real deal. It's a very, very nice car. Even like that, I would say even like the previous generation, not nearly as refined as this car. I don't know. I dig it, and I look at it compared to, you know, say the Forester, and the Forester still has quite a few rough edges.
Do you think the Forester like has those by design? I feel like Subaru is like, yeah, we can get a pass on that. We're Subaru.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I think the Forester is certainly more of a legitimate CUV. You know, I think it has a lot more capability. If you were to say, you know, I want to go bouncing down this fire road, you would certainly want a Forester over a CRV. You know, the CRV, even though it's got the all-wheel drive system, I think that's more of a foul weather system as opposed to a you know, a legitimate off-road quote-unquote system.
Well, and you got to pay. See, the thing with the Forester is they're all going to have
all-wheel drive right out of the box,
while the Escape and the CRV and the RAV4 make you pay extra for it.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't driven the new RAV4, and that's supposedly a lot more refined, but the last time I was in a RAV4, I was really unimpressed. But I was also, I was really hot to drive the Escape after driving the CRV because I think that those two really sat at the top, and I was disappointed by the Escape because I think, like you say, you know, there's so much room in the CRV, just the way, you know, the way it's designed to be used as a a vehicle for grown-ups. You know, the load height is low, it's easy to get in and out of, all of those things that make it the modern day sort of family wagon are really great in the CR-V. But
sure. And, you know, clever storage as well. You know, the center console opens up into, it's like having a TARDIS in the center of the freaking console. I mean, it's freakishly large. I mean, I to give you an idea, all right, I had four cans of brake cleaner and a set of like brand new in package lock ring pliers stuffed down in this thing, and I still had space. It was freakish. A buddy got in and was like, is that a live well? Could we put small trout in there? We probably could. I mean,
oh, you could put big trout in there.
That's right. It's pretty terrifying.
Yeah. So this is leather, all wheel drive, all that stuff. It's $33,000, right?
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah, I don't have the sticker sitting here in front of me, but it's not a cheap machine. That is for certain.
Yeah, but again, everybody's getting kind of expensive in that segment when you get them over.
Everything's getting expensive in that segment, and honestly, you know, I think I would rather have this over, you know, an SUV pretender. Like a Sorento or something like that that's larger. It's just it drives really well. It feels very comfortable. You know, it doesn't take any sort of mindset to think, well, I'm driving a larger vehicle. I mean, it is a big vehicle and it is a little tippy and all the rest of that, but it drives very car-like. And I think that, you know, if you're looking to the crossover set, I think this is probably one of the better options out there in terms of blending, you know, best of car world, best of SUV world. You get a lot of space, you get some, you know, all-wheel drive functionality, decent fuel economy, and a lot of room. You know, I think that's pretty good. And if you don't want the all-wheel drive, you know, it's you can get the two-wheel drive pretty cheap. I think a two-wheel drive EX starts at like 25,
yeah,
which is totally reasonable.
It's one of sort of the flagship Honda products. You know, it's something that they're very competitive with, and they sell a lot of them. They stand to really sell on their merit in that segment because it is a good vehicle and it's really well thought out. So I still think that among all the competitors, the CR-V is pretty difficult to beat. And that's not because we have any love lost for Honda around here either. So,
what are you driving?
You know how this is going to go, Zach.
I know what you're driving.
Yeah.
Tell the rest of the crowd what you're driving, Dan.
I tried. I really did. I've got a Raptor 6.2.
And that was horrible for you, I'm sure. It was the worst thing you've ever experienced.
This is a truck for punks.
Hello.
Sorry. Punks with really good credit or deep pockets.
Yeah.
But man, I love the engine. Love the engine. And it's probably a modular, so I'm probably going to eat my words, but about that engine. But the 6.2 is pretty great. It sounds phenomenal. Has plenty of horsepower to yank this thing around.
V8, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, I took it off road, and it just like it.
What do you mean you took it off road?
I took it mildly off road. I tried.
What do you mean you took it off road? Tell me what you mean.
I was not on pavement.
Were you in your front yard? Because that doesn't count.
No, there was there was dirt and elevation changes and things
like a construction site.
Things like that. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
uh-huh.
I don't want to really talk about where I went.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
yeah, it's better, but I don't know. In that element, like, I didn't take it somewhere where I could just run it wide friggin' open, like skipping off the top of hillocks, as it were. I this is somebody else's $50,000 pickup truck too. So
you're an evaluator. You can test a vehicle's limits without abusing it.
Yeah. I'm not so confident off road, turns out. So there's that. You know, it is brilliant for that intended purpose. I will say that. It is, you look at it and clearly it is set up to handle that kind of punishment. I know it's gotten that kind of punishment before it got to me, because the guy that dropped it off was like, oh, I don't know what he did, but this thing was full of mud. So I was like, right on. You know, part of it is I didn't have time to go and run it off road, given the other things I had going on this week. Yeah. Off-road.
So it's just a big soft riding, crazy powerful F-150 then, is what, I mean, to you.
But no, but it's more than that. I understand that the things that aggravate me about this truck are the things that nobody else is going to care about, because all of the things that are great about this truck are why you buy it.
I think you have to look at the Raptor. You know, I can certainly understand your recoil here, but what you need to understand about the Raptor is the Raptor to the performance truck set really is the Mustang GT to the performance car set.
Where that's exactly what it feels like.
It's for the cash, it is a freakishly capable vehicle right out of the box. There's no way that you could just buy an F-150 and set it up the same way and come out even remotely in the same, you know, financial ballpark.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, the closest thing you're going to find is, like, what, the Ram Runner, which isn't really not in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely for what it does, it's I mean, it's 50 grand, but you look at it and you go, well, they've spent the money underneath, because they certainly haven't spent it on the rest of the truck, because it's an F-150.
Burn.
You know, the things about the F-150 that make me angry are the things that would really piss me off after spending 50 grand on this thing. So and having it, oh, just, it's got a cheap, cheap interior. This one has the super cab, so it's got the clamshell doors.
Getting these clamshell doors, you're never gonna want these clamshell doors.
Words cannot express how much I despise this particular F-Series cab. It's been around since the late 90s. It started off as the Super Duty. It sucked then. It sucks now. I don't care how they try to fix it. The whole thing just vibrates. You close the door and you feel the entire cab just shift. You don't know whether the door is closed or not. It doesn't feel solid. I hate it. I would never spend my money for this. With a two-door cab, solid. And you know, like, don't get me wrong too, it's like, when I say this, the entirety of the Autoblog team goes, what, you're crazy, because I just talk about how much I dislike the F-150.
I mean, to be fair, I haven't driven a Raptor, which breaks my heart in all sorts of cruel ways. I can't imagine a world where I would not enjoy it. I understand what you don't like about the F-150. I get that.
But that's not what matters about this truck, and I think you're right. I think especially the you have a lot more experience off-roading, and you know where you can go and not get arrested. I think you'd really enjoy it, quite honestly. I think you'd walk away from being like, that thing is awesome. Because, yeah.
I think it's definitely a truck built for guys out west. I mean, you know, out here on the East Coast, off-roading is more of a, you know, a trail crawl sort of thing, where, you know, the F-150 is a big truck, and the Raptor is a big truck, and on a tight trail, that's a lot of brand new sheet metal to just sort of, you know, lay open.
Yeah.
So, you know.
There is that too. Just our and that's, I had a little bit of trouble like finding a place where I didn't want to go in and get ridiculously stuck. You know, a lot of the stuff that the Jeep guys can go down with their Wranglers, I'm looking at with this truck going, yeah, I'm not doing that. Not,
yeah, you don't know until you try. Just saying.
Yeah, yeah. I would rather try,
you know,
with something
buddy, with
I
Jeep,
own that I can bang.
He'd come pull you up.
Yeah. Also, my brother-in-law, who would gladly accompany me, is not in town, so that I'm just full of excuses, Zach.
That's like, all I'm hearing.
Really?
That's all I'm hearing out of your mouth.
Just, you know,
I had this awesome thing, and I couldn't because...
All I did... The most strenuous thing I really did with it was I took it to Target, and I bought cat litter and light bulbs.
Well, I hope you did a massive donut as you left the parking lot. You just sent those BFGs to their smoky grave.
No, I did not. Because when I walked out of Target, there were two police cruisers in front of Target. So I figured that I had best not...
have driven over the police cruisers.
I could have. But yeah. It's usually in your best interest to not aggravate your local constabulary.
Constabulary. You're just looking for an excuse to use the word constabulary. I walked right into that.
Damn it. You're right. I was.
Well, boo on you for not stretching the raptor's legs. I don't know. I bet it's awesome. I can certainly see your complaints. I mean, I guess my question is, which full size truck do you prefer? I mean, the Ram is certainly very nice.
Yeah, I really like the Ram. Really like the Ram, and part of that is. I haven't been in the new GMs. I liked the old GMs as well, which I realize also makes me crazy because
Jesus Christ. So you just hung the F-150 out to dry and you're rushing to the old GMs as some paragon of interior quality. I gonna have to disagree with you there.
They're better. They're better.
Lies. Oh my God, lies.
I'm sorry. I have not been in an F-150 that feels anything but cheap and plasticky inside.
All of those things you can apply to the previous generation GM trucks.
I thought the GM trucks, like, I don't
are
know.
Complete crap inside? Yeah, no, I totally agree with you, Dan.
I did not feel that way.
Oh my God. Every time I get in a current, well, previous generation now, I guess, full-size GM, I'm just disappointed. Everything just feels cheap. It feels like it's about to fall off in your hands. It's just not in any way good. I don't know. I feel like Ford has at least sort of tried to keep the pace with nicer interiors and...
Oh, come on. F-Series interiors, all shiny and...
You want to talk about crappy interiors, you talk to my 01 F-250. That is a crappy interior. That looks like it should have been probably, an Econo line from like 1982 or something. It's really bad. Well, it probably was, actually.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's probably not that far off. My brother has a F-250 of about the same vintage, and it does have a crappy interior. So, I mean, the F-150 interior now is better than that for sure, but and the Raptor has nice seats, and it's got the tech, it's dressed up a bit. There is all that stuff. I like all the auxiliary switches because they have lights on them. They don't do anything,
but they're built in there, so you can add all sorts of lights and a CB and whatever you want to add. It's very cool.
Yeah. So and I love the fact that it has a camera mounted in the grill up front.
Yeah. So it's for approach and departure, so you can look at obstacles as you approach them. It's very, very cool.
It has a washer for the camera.
Mud, man.
Which
mud gets everywhere. It's the worst.
I mean, it's a very purpose-built machine. I think you're entirely right. I was driving it tonight going, this feels like such a muscle car of a truck. It's just a very, certainly it doesn't belong out on the open highway. It works, it does its thing, but that's not its element. It's like it would be like driving a Cobra Jet around.
Here comes that moment where I build my own Raptor. Sorry,
that's the thing that I don't like about it. I mean, given the I will say this, you can drive it hard or you can drive it easy. Either way, you're getting about 13.5 miles to the gallon. So you might as well just drive it hard because it's more fun. But the other thing I didn't like about it was the ridiculous, like silly 90s stripes and vents and louvers and stuff. Is that really what people want?
So what was yours stickered out at? How much did that one cost?
$5,760. This has the preferred equipment package 517A, whatever that includes. I believe that is the 17-inch wheels, the 315/70/17s, the 410 gears, the select shift transmission, the I don't know however many gallon fuel tank, which I'm going to cry when I fill tomorrow. box Dockside Graphics. Oh, mine had the luxury package, which explains why it had the nicer seats and the power adjustable pedals. You know, fancy things like temp, climate control, remote start, heated and cooled front seats, awful Sony audio system. You know, so it started off at like 42, and it's not really optioned that hard. You know, $50,000. I thought it was going to be 60. So,
Well, there you go.
You know,
it's a chunk of change. Yeah, it's a lot of money.
But somebody was talking with me about it, and I did say, like, you know, for what it's outfitted with and what it can do, you're going to spend probably the same amount of money to get a truck like that any other way, if not more. So unless you just take some kind of clapped out rig and build it yourself.
Right. I mean, I don't think there is a comparable production truck that has that capability in terms of just bashing across the desert at will. You know, if you're talking about rolling around, you know, in our neck of the woods, you know, across trails and rocks and all the rest of that, yeah, a base Rubicon starts at $30,000, somewhere on there.
Oh, like, yeah, and
no better way to go. And, you know, pocket the extra $20,000. You could buy the Rubicon, and then you could nearly buy a base F-150 to tow, you know, whatever you want to around in the bed with, if you felt the need, for the price of the Raptor. Just saying.
That's an interesting take. Mm-hmm. You do that. We do that often. We do this exercise of like, well, one's good, more is better.
Have you seen my garage? If one broken thing is good, many broken things is better.
Oh, well, speaking of broken things, I actually took the Volvo down off the ramps today. I had to put it on the battery charger for a while, and then it started up. In the meantime, I vacuumed the Jeep because it had gotten a little filthy, so...
How was the Jeep, by the way? Well, this is week one, right? Week one of ownership?
Yeah, we picked it up last Tuesday.
Are you thrilled with it?
Yeah, so far, so good. I haven't driven it tremendously much because we managed to pick up a nasty little bastard of a virus from the car dealer. As well, he was like, hey, it was like, you know... First time we met him looking for the cars, I'm sick as a dog. And thanks,
guy.
Thanks for coughing all over your hand and then shaking mine with it.
You're the best.
But anyway, yeah, so now that the fever has broken, we'll be probably driving it a little bit more, but it is really refined and comfortable, and my wife was saying that it feels like a lot less work to drive than the S60. I was like, yeah. And I don't have to worry that it's a time bomb. Mm-hmm. I don't have to. It was a weird feeling leaving my car. It was like, I feel like I'm betraying it. But on the other hand, I'm so thrilled that it's somebody else's problem.
Sure.
And you drive a new car completely differently, especially when you're the one paying for it. Like, you know how you drive media cars, and you know how other people drive media cars. Mm-hmm. When you own it, you do not drive it that way.
That's true. Wheels, tires, brakes, all that stuff's in your pocket at that point.
Yeah, it's. But also, you're like, you know, I just don't want to abuse it. You just. It's different, I guess. And it's different, too, because it's brand new versus, like, the used cars where I'm like, they're already broken in. I want to know what they're going to do. I want to see how they're going to react or whatever. So you take them out, you beat the hell out of them a little bit. I kind of have yet to do that with this one.
So how long is it going to be before you get, like, the Jeep aftermarket bug and start wrenching on this thing?
That's the thing. Like, the guys at work that I sit around, you know, everybody in our general area, we all really like Jeeps, and I have this sort of different collection of tastes than they do. So the first question out of one of the guys' mouths was like, are you gonna lift it? I was like, absolutely not. I don't want to lift. No. Am I gonna lift it? No. I don't like Jeeps with lifts. My favorite Jeep is a Wrangler Sahara. Just stock. makes me happy. And I realized that, you know, I'm not going to go crawl the Rubicon with it. But that's not what I'm going to do with it anyway. So, hooray. So, yeah, he's like, you know, he's got a Frontier that's all jacked up and he's got 33s on it or something.
I'm like, nice.
Yeah, okay.
No, I would say with just like some slightly oversized tires, the Grand Cherokee that you have would be totally capable for, you know, mild trails. Not anything crazy, just, you know.
Oh, they make one like that. They make the Trailhawk.
Sure, which is awesome.
Yeah, which is actually the vehicle I drove to the New York Auto Show.
Nice.
And it was, you know, the thing about that was it was still really refined, even though it had extra skid plates and it had the knobbier tires and the tow hooks and all that stuff. So, yeah, but, I mean, I'm not going to take this thing off-road.
Oh, you're missing out. It's such a family activity. It's a lot of fun. Throw the kids in the car. Well, everybody goes out. And, like, there's little picnics involved. It's a good time.
Is that how it is down there?
Yeah.
We may go to – there's an event because All Things Jeep used to be up here. It's still somewhat based up here. So there's some stuff that we may go to because kids love Jeeps as well, especially mm-hmm. my kids. But the other thing I was thinking about was that this purchase now sort of sets things in motion for the CJ5 that my brother-in-law has that is actually a low-miles CJ5 that would be pretty easy restoration project because now we've gotten past the... If you buy a new car, if you buy a different car, that's going to be for me, not for you, kind of mm-hmm. thing. So, which was absolutely true because, really, I drove that car. I was like, oh, the winter has not been kind to you. So, yeah, there'll be time for playing, and if it's not something that we need to make a daily driver.
Sure,
we can have fun, but in general, yeah, the Grand Cherokee's quite nice. I'm still a little bit obsessive about it too. Where it's like I've said, park far, far away from everything. Make sure the kids don't step on the part where it says no step because they're going to tear the rockers off. And
sure, yeah,
things like that. But yeah, it's
you would fix that a set of rock sliders. Fall over those, no problem.
Yeah, I'm not really going to get too much into the accessorization. The one thing I will do is I will find that little AMC grill badge and sort of quietly place the AMC flag on it somewhere.
I like it.
Because. And the guy across the street has he's got a WK. This is WK too, but he's got a WK with a Hemi, so he was talking about how much he loves that. I was like, yeah, but you bought the Hemi, which means you pay a lot in gas. But yeah, it's good.
I just searched for Grand Cherokee rock rails and my photo of your truck came up.
Excellent.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that.
So yeah, what's the scoop with the horse? Anything good happening with that, or are we still in that the last time we spoke?
So the next installment's going to unveil the engine situation, so I probably shouldn't say anything beyond that, but I will say that things have gotten incredibly expensive incredibly quickly. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see what kind of organs I feel like selling to sort
Here's
of fund
Santa
this.
Claus. How are you? How is your wife?
You're Santa Claus. I really have not been that good, but listen, brother, you help a man out.
Please note the size and color of each item.
Yeah, I mean,
or just send money.
Just money.
Yeah, well, in the meantime, though, you'll have some things to bust your knuckles on, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm getting a new set of hubs for the Scout. They're on the way. The Scout came with, well, to be fair, you could get these hubs called Lock-O-Matics. They were built by Warren. Had a really clever mechanism inside so that you puts the truck in four-wheel drive, and if the mechanism inside of the hub turned and the outer wheel did not, then the hubs would automatically lock in, more or less, and that would give you four-wheel drive, right?
Those are the ones with the sprag clutch in them, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My axle came out of a truck that the guy used to skid steer logs. So he would he was a legitimate lumberjack. He would cut down the trees, and then he would hook a chain to the tree and hook a chain to the truck, and then pull the tree out of the forest with the truck. So I had mismatched hubs and all sorts of just hamberedness going on, and I couldn't figure out how to make the friggin' hubs work. And I've got like three sets of Lock-O-Matics, and I'm, from all the pieces, I still can't make it work. So I broke down and I got the stuff to just put the freaking worn premiums on it and just roll, and my life will be simple, and my hubs will no longer say IH Lock-O-Matic, which breaks my heart in all sorts of ways, but they will work, which I think is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, you're just going to have to get out and lock the hubs in the rain, right? Like that old...
Which is what I have to do anyway, since the freaking Lock-O-Matics don't work, so...
Awesome. Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Do you own anything that you don't have to maintain, like, fix?
No, I don't. Everything I own, with the tentative exception of the Miata, is falling the hell apart, and it's driving me up the wall. As in, just set fire to everything, and walk away, and start with a clean slate, or lots of debt. I don't know.
Well, you kind of got to do both.
God.
The clean slate is costly. Especially if you're going to torch everything.
Like, man, I came so close with a lawnmower this afternoon, you have no idea.
Oh, that's what I should have done with the Raptor. I should have taken more scrap metal to the scrapyard. I don't think they were open today.
Anyway.
Yeah, we should hit the news. Anyway.
I impressed myself.
The first piece that I thought would be interesting to comment upon would be the fact that subcompact cars are in the tank, even as gas prices have pretty steadily been around $3.54 a gallon, which is where everybody sort of, you know, everybody always complains about the price of gas, but it just doesn't seem like, unless there's a wild spike in a very short time, little cars just are not, you know, you get used to the pain after a while of the gas price, and people want what they want, and then clearly that's not little cars.
Well, it's always especially hard for the subcompact class because, you know, the cost savings jumping from compact to subcompact isn't great, and the fuel economy boon jumping from compact to subcompact isn't great.
Not anymore,
Not anymore, and the amount of space you lose doing that is huge, and just, you know, regular drivability, you know, what makes a car tolerable to be in is pretty massive. So I'm not entirely shocked to hear this. You know, like you say, unless there's just some massive spike, I think it was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when gas prices jumped from like $2.50 to $4.50 a gallon in the span of like a couple months. Then you saw people just running out and buying smart cars just because they had nothing else, no other recourse, I guess.
They had no other sort of synapses firing, for sure.
Right. I think that's probably the more accurate way to put that. I would be interested to see how the regular compacts are doing. I imagine they're pulling along just fine. But
well,
stick somebody, you know, I did this with my sister when she bought her new car. She was looking at a bunch of small vehicles, and I said, well, you know, take a look at the new Fiesta. It's a pretty cool little car. It's, you know, it's just her. She's just looking for something that's looks decent, gets great fuel economy, blah, blah, blah. Well, she went and drove that, and I think the one that she drove was, I think, priced up over 20 grand. And then she went to the Honda dealer and drove a Civic that was priced at like 14. It was just discounted.
Wait.
Well. Yeah. Yeah.
They had Civics for 14?
Yeah. It was right when the new model came in.
And they were like, oh, dear God.
They were
God.
Like, these are gone. These are gone. Right. So she scored a banging deal, and she still gets great fuel economy, and it drives, you know, more like a regular car, and she's got more space, and I don't know. I think that's what a lot of buyers realize, that there's just no real benefit to going to the subcompacts.
Well, it's funny because the picture that we used for the post is a Mazda 2, and I actually really like driving the Mazda 2. I'm very entertained by that car. But that car in particular feels exceptionally cheap, too. It's you clearly see what you're not paying for.
That's the whole class, you know.
Even the Fiesta feels more premium.
Fiesta is also more expensive by a lot.
Yeah. But, I mean, at their core, they're pretty much the same vehicle. So it's just surprising to notice that sort of dichotomy, I guess. But I think one of the other things that happens is that we're shifting toward crossovers. You know, crossovers are, like, red hot. And, like you say, for the price differential, you're not gonna really make that head versus heart argument. You know, there's still this perception of size being what you pay for versus quality. I mean, think about it. What would you buy if you had $20,000 to spend? Would you be looking at a Fiesta or a Mazda 2, or you'd probably go with the Sonic Turbo because that's a pretty fun car, but you know,
if I had $20,000 to blow, are we limiting myself to new cars?
For the purposes of this exercise, how about you?
How would you not wind up in a TSX, right? If that was what you wanted, like something front wheel drive and good looking, and
because they'd be used. And if you were looking for a brand new car with $20,000, I know. $20,000 can buy you pretty much anything.
Yeah, except for like a Miata. It's like just outside of the Miata range. Maybe like a previous gen has been sitting on the lot for a little, or not like a previous gen, previous year model.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. If I had $20,000, oof.
Wow.
See, $20,000, you can't get a Focus ST for $20,000. You can't get any of the really fun stuff for $20,000. I don't know. Can you
get champagne taste, son?
Listen, champagne taste. Yeah, that's me.
I'm just saying, Focus ST. I mean, you
$25,000, it's extra $5,000, man. Mow more yards. I don't know what to say.
Negotiation. That's when you like bring everything you can trade, like the lawnmower, the mule, the I don't know. Bushels of corn.
Freaking F-250.
Lots of cash in the back. Yeah. I think for me, like looking at this, I would so much rather be in a Cruze than a Sonic per se. I mean, there are those particular models that stick out, like the Focus ST. Yeah, that's fine, but that's a thing unto itself. And for me, I feel like this is representative of a lot of consumers too. You know, given the choice, like you said, that the price savings aren't all that much, and you kind of sacrifice to a large degree on some stuff. Well, it's more logical. Well, yeah, you're one person commuting in the car all the time, so you really don't need more than a Fiesta. You really don't need
more.
Yeah,
but you don't want that time to suck. You know, right. It's really easy to underestimate how having a car that you just enjoy can improve your day-to-day existence. You know, I know that sounds materialistic and all the rest of that, but the difference between driving, you know, for Beth, driving the Miata to work every day, where, you know, she can put the top down in warm mornings, she can put the top down on the way home from work, and, you know, it just helps sort of wash away whatever's, you know, coming at her during the day or, you know, behind her at work. Just little stuff like that can go a long way to sort of changing your outlook, right? Or at least give you an idea of, you know, why you're working so hard. You know, if you're busting your tail from 9 to 5 every day of the week, or
you can do that.
Yeah, I hear that's a thing that happens somewhere. You know, and you have to go get in a rental spec subcompact. It's just you know,
right?
Sucks. I mean, maybe you're sticking cash back for retirement or whatever, but you can make perfectly decent choices beyond the same financial scale now and have better vehicles. So I'm saying,
well, and we'll see. We've got another topic where we'll pick this up again, but we'll see too. That it's not. I think it's just there are better cars to be had for the same money.
Right.
Like, objectively better, not necessarily just larger, but overall better
cars,
better values, and you know those cars are clobbering pretty much everybody else. So you know, there are cars that have held up too. The Versa, surprisingly, and the Fiesta are actually
the Versa's cheap. You don't underestimate just how
and it
how
has
well
a lot of room.
Cheap car, yeah, how well a cheap car will sell. It has a lot of room. It, despite what everybody says, it's a perfectly tolerable vehicle. So you know.
Yeah,
you disagree. I know you disagree.
I'm not as charmed by this generation Versa as I was by the earlier gen, especially the hatch. Never really liked the sedan. But the Mazda 2 is down like almost 52%. The Yaris is down 30%. The Hyundai Accent is down 25%. But, you know, overall, I just think that automakers aren't really telling the story of these models either. You know, you don't see too many ads for the Mazda 2 or the Rio or the Yaris.
They're not making crap tons of cash off these things, you know?
Yeah. But
there's
no
real incentive for them to push them really hard because, you know.
So why have them?
You're asking the wrong guy.
Are they there for the next time prices spike and people knee-jerk them their way out of whatever they're currently driving into a new car because that's, you know, retail, whatever.
Yeah.
Retail.
Preacher man.
Yeah. Retail ecological something or other.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. It's 11:08 p.m.
I can
hear. Yeah. So I don't know. I think that the little cars are still going to have a fight, and it's just the way they go in this market. They're priced right on top of the somewhat larger cars, which have really, really come up in quality, and you've got a lot more selection now than in the last 3 years. So there's a lot of pressure right there, right on top of them. So hey, we'll see how it does. We'll give a non-committal kind of shrug. But in another way, we've got China driving the bus with the Ford Fusion EcoBoost 1.5 liter that's coming. There was a rumor, apparently, that this was going to be a triple. Can you imagine a three-cylinder 1.5 liter engine?
In that freaking car, how miserable that would have been.
I realize they have the three-cylinder 1 liter, but 1.5 liters of three-cylinder, like,
so coarse.
That's a lot of displacement for a 1.5. Yeah. And, you know, they can only play around with sort of like, you know, you can make the bore real big and the stroke short so that there's not a lot of reciprocation going on. But even so, like, that's just. Yeah, so I'm very glad to hear, actually, that it's going to be a 1.5 liter EcoBoost. It's just, you know, the story really isn't that much of a story, I think, but it's just the fact that we're seeing more and more of this where China is sort of determining what everybody else gets, too, and I think that's the key here, because is it going to be more or less powerful than the 1.6 that they've already got?
Well, it's, let's see, it's somewhere around 177 horsepower, 177 pound-foot of torque, which is right on top of the 1.6. The reason they went for the 1.4 or 1.5 is because there's a pretty significant tax break for cars at 1.5 liters or less in China. So hitting that displacement mark, you know, just made more sense.
Yeah, so basically, it's a tenth of a liter, and you don't really miss anything. And China maybe adds some Ford buyers. And I think Ford really wants to make further inroads in China because they started off late. They started off even behind GM. And they're, you know, by the time they got really rolling in China, all the good partners had been snapped up by other automakers.
Well, I mean, GM rolled into China
years ago.
For serious. I mean, they've been making a very serious effort at it for years and years. And I think that that's one of the few companies that really went at it with some seriousness, you know.
Maybe that's why they weren't terribly worried about the U.S. market for, like, a decade.
Yeah, that must be it.
How'd that work out for you guys? Things just didn't quite take off in China the way we had hoped by the time the economy just completely took a dump. But really, we're good now. All right. So sticking with that small car thing that we had talked about, the Focus. The Focus is the Fiesta's biggest problem, and it's also pretty much everybody else's biggest problem because it is the world's best-selling car this year.
Unless you're Toyota and you say Ford's lying.
Toyota is full of crap. Anyway, do you have their explanation why they think that the Corolla is still the number?
Toyota says that, you know, the bulk data that Ford's relying on. Toyota's saying that they sold 1.16 million Corolla models last year. Polk is saying it's closer to 872,000, 873,000, somewhere around there.
Wait, okay, so 1.16, let's round it up to 1.2. That's 400,000 more cars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Toyota's pointing to Corolla-based vehicles like the Matrix, as well as Corolla-badged vehicles like the Corolla Fielder, which is the Scion XB-based Corolla Roomion, which is an Australian vehicle.
Don't you find that that's pretty distinctly disingenuous?
I don't think this matters. You know, who cares? I guess Ford and Toyota care.
Yeah, Ford and Toyota care.
But you know, I don't think Ford is above sort of pulling these shifty naming tricks. You know, when it's in its benefit either. So, you know,
I think though that the Ford side of this is actually coming away a little cleaner this time around, mm-hmm. with more pure numbers of Focus vehicles. And I don't quite get the argument about Corolla-based vehicles. Like, it's either a Corolla or it's not.
Not.
it's something else. It's a Matrix. Right. It's not a like I realize under the skin, yes, it's a Corolla. It's built on the same flexible line, but it's not the Corolla model. It is the Matrix. Therefore, you can't say that the Corolla has outsold the Fusion. I mean the Focus. Damn it, Ford. If the actual model hasn't. And like the Corolla is also so uninspiring, it makes me sad when it's on top of the sales game.
Well, you know, people like comfortable. You know, it's why people continue to wear ugly ties, because it's the only tie they have and they've loved it all their lives. I don't know. Maybe. I assume so. I mean, can you explain ugly ties in another fashion?
Lack of taste?
Possible. Which could also be responsible for the popularity of the Corolla.
Okay. All right.
It just feels like one of those cars that you know, like these people go to the dealership, they hit that new car syndrome thing. One of my buddies has a theory about, well, it's the new car, you know, and maybe they've been driving, you know, a 1992 Corolla for the past 20 years, and they go into the dealer and they get in a brand new Corolla, and it feels like the best thing on the face of the planet, and they just chunk down their money and they drive away and they're happy as a clam because they never got in anything else.
I don't know, I feel like getting in a 2013 Corolla feels an awful lot like getting in a 1992 Corolla.
You say that until you drive a 1992 Corolla. I'm going to put that on your homework list. Go drive a 1992 Corolla. Find one on Craigslist. Say that you're going to go buy it and go test drive it.
You want me to lie?
Dan.
Yeah, part of it may be the new car thing. Part of it may also be that familiarity where the old Corolla feels like the new Corolla feels like the next Corolla kind of thing, where they're all very familiar and people are comfortable with that. They have a stellar reputation, so there is that. It's like...
Well, you know, when half your drivers lapse into coma, there's no one to complain. So, you know, there's
They're a fine car. They just don't do anything.
What does that mean, fine car?
No, I mean, they have four wheels and they go. And they rarely break.
Do not just literally have a conversation about how it's better to have a vehicle that inspires you, that makes you want to be there.
From your perspective.
I'm just saying.
I don't know that I'd be. It's hard, you know, because it comes down to, like, what do you recommend for other people versus what do you want for yourself, right? You know, for us, we would buy the most ridiculous, compromise fraught thing that just makes us smile every time we get in it, right?
Scout.
But for somebody else, you're not going to recommend that because you know you're going to lose a friend. So when somebody asks you, what's the best car for my money, I find myself recommending things that I would never, ever consider myself. That's to the true. Point where I've recommended the Scion XB because in objective measures, it is a fine vehicle. It is roomy. It has plenty of features for the price. You know it's going to be pretty reliable. It's got a high resale value. All of those things that just suck the life out of being a car enthusiast. You know, but I think it also comes back to the fact that nobody really cares if you have the top-selling car. Just make it awesome.
They're not going to make it awesome, because if they make it awesome, nobody will buy it.
Right. So, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, we should also pause and remind everybody that we are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of performance tires to make your Corolla at least stick to the road, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. Speaking of awesome things that nobody's going to buy, Maserati has released the Regal. I mean, the Gibber.
Oh.
Come on. They Quattroporte looks like a Buick.
Mm-hmm.
The how do you say it anyway? Ghibli?
No. I have no idea.
Anyway, they're taking a book from a page.
Just call it the G. How about that? We'll just call it the G.
The G. All right. It's really under the skin, though. It's a Chrysler 300, right? I believe that's what this car is, and it's going to have V6 and V8 power.
Turbocharged V6 engines.
Yeah, Europe's going to get a diesel. We probably won't.
Diesel Maserati, that feels weird.
Feels wrong, but then again, Chrysler TC by Maserati.
True, fair.
Pretty much was the wrongest thing ever.
Yeah.
Totally. Although, true. You know, I mean, that was a LeBaron with a pretty, you could get a pretty well-fettled cylinder head on top of
it. Don't defend this, Dan. Don't defend this.
Just saying.
And you can just say no more, is all right. I'm saying.
This is
Maserati. All right, so they want this thing to go up against the E-Class and the 5 Series. Do you see that working out in any way whatsoever?
I see.
If you wanted to not buy either of one of those, do you know what you would buy? A Jaguar.
Right. And that's what I was just going to say. I could see this competing with the Jaguar for the niche side of things. But the problem is, like, the E-Class and the 5 Series are the sort of the Corolla in focus of that segment. Like, people who want those things and don't want to think too much about it just go right to BMW or Mercedes.
Yep. It's totally true.
And if you want something more interesting, already you're buying the Jaguar. So... Yep. I think there's room for the Maserati to move down into this segment. I mean, they bring a unique style to it. You know, the interior is going to be bonkers. It's going to have, there will be a V8 version that's going to have a V8 swiped from Ferrari, or at least fiddled with by them. So, you know, who's going to complain about more style?
Not me. I mean, I think it's interesting to see Maserati's finally sort of getting some direction. It just seemed to be a brand that was just sort of bumbling around out at sea, not really doing anything, like Ferrari's more disgraceful younger brother. like Ferrari is like the super hardcore track star, and Maserati's like playing with 12-sided die in the basement.
Maserati plays Magic the Gathering. Awesome. I'm actually looking at the pictures, having a really hard time seeing Chrysler 300 Dodge Charger in it, which is apparently where the platform's coming from. So that to me is a really good sign that nobody else is going to see it either. It looks kind of tidy in pictures. So if it's sharing those underpinnings, those are actually big car underpinnings. So I want to see it in person. I want to see the proportions, because it looks fantastic in pictures, like all fancy cars do. So, you know, the high points are there too. You know, it's going to have 8-speed automatic, rear wheel drive. So those are going to be good. They'll have available all wheel drive. I think a diesel would actually be quite a unique proposition in this market. I think it would also probably make.
Well, I think they have to offer the diesel, because buyers in the EU expect a diesel in this class.
Oh yeah, I mean there's E-Class and 5 Series diesels that get snapped up like crazy over there. I mean, part of it is the same reason why Ford's doing that 1.5 liter. The diesel fuel is taxed less heavily in Europe, and they've got a lot of lead on us in terms of it being popular. Apparently they have a big appetite for diesels that we don't have, because all our diesels have always been crappy engines that blew up.
And crazy expensive.
Yeah, but they're still expensive. You still don't get that payoff, but whatever. They're fun to drive. What I'm waiting for, though, okay, we've got now Maserati saying, hey, we're going to flirt with the U.S. market and come with this awesome product. And we've got Fiat that's saying, yeah, we're going to bring the 4C and we're going to return to the U.S. market. Because in Europe, that market is like super quiet right now, and at least the U.S. market is showing some signs of life, along with, you know, China and other sort of evergreen markets. Which do you think is going to arrive first? Are they just
you're between Maserati and Alfa?
Maserati and yeah.
Maserati. I mean, there are already Maserati dealerships here. I mean, it's just a matter of time before the model shows up, as opposed to the fact that there aren't really Alfa dealers, right?
Yeah, that's true. Except I mean, the old ones from the 90s.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, from what I've heard, the 4C is going to be a limited production run sort of scenario, less than 1,000 units, I think is what I've heard. For the, I think that's right. For the U.S. So, you know, figure at least a year to figure out where to sell the things, and then they show up here, right? So 2014, 2015, somewhere around there.
Yeah, it'll be, I mean, they want to sell 50,000, Maserati wants to sell 50,000 cars a year.
That's a number.
Yeah, I mean, that would make them, what, about the same size as Lincoln in terms of sales? not throwing stones, just trying to point out.
Can we have one podcast where Dan doesn't just like take a crap on Lincoln? Is that a thing we can do?
I didn't.
It was in your voice. It was the tonality. That was totally how that was.
Honestly, Lincoln sells more than that. They sell probably 100,000 cars total. So
they sell like 51,000. I'm kidding. It's a vortex. You can't help it. Like once you get close,
who's crapping on Lincoln now?
I know.
All right. So we'll just say, is it just me though, or does it look like a Buick?
It does not look like a Buick. I wish Buicks looked like this. God, I wish Buicks looked like this. Buick wish Buicks looked like this. That's just the truth.
All right, fine. We'll just call it a tie in terms of the. I just think you're wrong. I think it looks like a Buick or something else that's. It's a sedate looking car. Like the Maseratis that I remember are just wacky and classically proportioned, and like you got the Ghibli too, right? That was, it looked like a Aston Martin from the 80s, and it was all square and had big bulge fenders and stuff, and it looked weird, but it was also like you'd see it and you'd be like, yeah, it's a Maserati because nothing else is that nuts. And now it's just like every time I see a Quattroporte, I have to look twice because they blend in.
Right.
And I guess there's a market for cars that are premium that don't scream, hey, look at me. Mm-hmm. But I never thought Maseratis were that car. I don't know. We should move on to the Q&A. I have an awesome question for you about your favorite brand. You know I'm lying. So Tristan from Massachusetts says he's seen lots of good deals on Saab 9.3s compared to other used luxury sedans. wait, it gets better. Are they a worthwhile consideration? How do they drive? Will getting parts for them in the near future be an issue now that Saab is no longer around?
You know, I haven't driven a modern Saab, so I can't comment on that. I'm just going to defer to you, Dan.
Oh, come on. You're no fun tonight, Zach.
Don't do it. God, don't do it. Jesus Christ. The brand died for a reason. Right? Just look at as much as I love, all right, I'm like a patron saint of dead brands. I love International up one side and down the other, but they died for a reason. They made a crappy, uncompetitive product. Take it as a lesson. Don't buy it. Don't do it. Buy yourself a BMW. It'll be great. It'll be fantastic.
Saabs drive better than...
Don't care.
They
don't
drive better
it.
Than... Oh, let me quantify. They drive better than Volvos. And that's about all they drive.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna... I mean, they drive okay. Honestly, you're probably going to be able to get parts for quite a while. They have a lot of GM in them, specifically Opel. But really, you want to do that to yourself? You want to buy an orphan? Yeah, all right. If we had Pocket on here, he'd be... Oh, he got rid of his Saab, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah.
Nah, he still has it.
Oh. Hmm. Yeah. Maybe we can hook this guy up with Pockert, and he can buy a Viggen. A Viggen convertible, I believe, because what's better than a Saab? A Saab with the roof hacked off.
A Saab with no backbone.
and lots of horsepower. Because
pool noodle.
Because
what else you got? What other questions?
Wait. What was that word?
Pool noodle.
Oh, pool noodle. Okay.
I'm not going to ask what you thought I said.
I thought it was one of those sort of southern colloquialisms that just gets stuck in your throat every now and then.
Y'all don't have pool noodles where you're from, man.
Yeah, anyway. Has BMW's model explosion already gone too far? If not, what will be the model that jumps the shark?
They're all over the freaking place. I feel like BMW just has so many resources at this point. They're finding it's like the company has given their engineers and designers busy work because they don't know what else to do.
Write me an essay.
Exactly. Write me an essay. Fill this white space. Invent me some white space and then fill it. I think that's basically what's going on at BMW right now.
So you don't think that they're sort of wisely filling all those niches with stuff?
People will buy it because people are stupid.
Well, they're especially stupid about that brand.
No, they're stupid about every brand. It's why people will willingly wear John Deere hats when it's the worst freaking brand on the face of the planet. It's just...
You're not a John Deere fan? Explain.
I own a John Deere. It's the worst machine ever conceived by man. And I don't care that it was made by MTD, because you know who put their name on it? Anybody in the class? Dan?
John Deere?
John Deere put their name on
it. Yeah, but that's okay.
Don't care. So who put your name on it?
It was made by MTD, so it's probably got like, what, a Robinair Subaru engine?
No, it's got a 17.5 horsepower Kohler, which I didn't even know was a freaking thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Hydrostatic. The whole thing is just falling apart. It's just a heap.
I love how we went from BMW.
It's the same thing. It's that blind brand loyalty is what it is. You know, like I'm just going to buy this
because it was
No. The John Deere came to me. I did not pursue the John Deere. The John Deere just showed up. And within the first 5 minutes, it had nearly cut off my thumb. Hand to God. That's the legitimate story.
So why? Okay, look. This works with BMWs, too. Buy vintage ones. And this is how I deal with the lawn and garden.
I don't want a project. Get old I just stuff. Want it to function.
I don't want a
vintage microwave, Dan. I just want to be able to get up in the morning, stick my cold coffee in the microwave, and then push the button and it start. I don't want to have to to make coffee and then spend the next 3 hours just disassembling and reassembling the damn microwave just so it'll work. That's not enjoyable to me. There's nothing enjoyable about either microwaves or lawnmowers to me at all. They're just horrible, evil necessities that have been... Why do we have grass? That's what I want to know.
You know what you could do? You could get yourself
a... Set it on fire. I could hit it with a sledgehammer.
Get yourself a scythe. You know, and you could just sort of swing goats. Them back and forth. Goats would work, except for any kind of animal that eats things, also craps.
This is true.
And that means that you've got to clean up either grass or crap or both.
Point being...
BMW
has knows that its buyers will buy things, and they feel like they're compelled to crank out new and interesting models to con their buyers into buying things. And some of the models are lower priced, like the upcoming front wheel drive stuff, which will talk people into buying BMWs who have always wanted BMWs but couldn't afford them. So there you go.
All right, I'm just gonna say that the recent X4, I think it's a smart move for them because people are looking for ways to spend their money on BMWs, so they might as well, and whatever. I think that they've gotten ridiculous with their naming. If that were called something else,
it's been that way forever.
Yeah, but if it were not called the X4, if it were the X3 Sportback or something.
X3 Grand Coupe.
Yeah, okay. Nothing's
yeah, called. Yeah, see?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
They're out of control. But the busy work.
All right. Well, fine. In honor of this being tax day, if the IRS suddenly informed you that you've been overpaying your taxes for the past 7 years and that you're getting $30,000 back, including compounded interest, what sort of car would you get, considering that hell has just frozen over? New or used car, SUV, truck, modern or classic, practical, family, work, vehicle, or personal toy?
$30,000, huh?
$30,000. I think if I got $30,000, I'd just put it in the house. I'd redo it.
$30,000, I would take 10 of it, finish the horse properly. I would take 5 of it, finish the scout properly. What does that leave me?
That's 15 off 30, so you've got 15 left.
15 left, yeah. So let's see. I would probably drop another 5 in the Miata. No, let's go 10 in the Miata. I would go with the
Targa. What would you do for 10 in the Miata?
Target package is probably isn't 10. That's suspension, that's brakes, that's the supercharger.
Supercharger.
Yeah, right. Probably some nice tires. And that leaves me with 5, right? So 5, I would...
put it in an annuity for retirement.
Nope, I would fix the bike. I would fix the EZ. Probably do an Ohlins fork conversion. Maybe a single-sided swing arm. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Wow. You could figure out how to blow every single dollar of that.
I could figure out a way to spend every last copper cent on the face of the planet, Dan. I could do it in 2 seconds.
Awesome. That might explain... Never mind.
Shut your face, Dan.
I think, honestly, do I have to buy cars with it? Because I'd really like to...
You have to buy cars with it. Don't be lame. Don't buy furniture. Don't buy furniture.
I want a kitchen upgrade. Just saying, if I had to buy a car with it, that's difficult. I think I'd go. You had such a list. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of $30,000. I just dropped $30,000 on a vehicle. More than that, honestly, I'm gonna kiss and tell. But
Yeah, but you dropped somebody else's 30 grand on it, so that's different.
No, it was, it's all my responsibility now. Oh, that's a very good question, because we've got the SUV kind of thing now. So now I want something that's sort of fun to drive on an everyday basis. And for me,
some ridiculous Mopar that you just throw 30K at for.
Oh, I was actually talking with my wife about this. I was like, yeah, now I can get a Challenger. And she looked at me like, you're not a Challenger guy. I was like, I love the Challenger. I realize it's ridiculous, but I love it. Because it is like 1972. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm going to be completely lame and say Porsche 912. 67 Porsche 912.
That's, done. That must be a very nice example for 30K.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're going to buy one of those older Porsches, try a good one.
I understand.
Spend the money. It's the 912. It's not the 911.
I understand.
So it's a nice economical driver. It doesn't beat the hell out of you. It's you know, I think it's that would be a good one. That, yeah. So I think the shuffling through the comments, I see interesting things like Lincoln is the worst car brand ever. Not that I want to jump on that bandwagon. I just thought I'd bring it up. And we also had another question that I thought was rather funny. Why does NEF not give you guys motorcycles?
Don't get me started. Largely because most of the motorcycle press plates are based in Los Angeles, and we are not.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not.
There's also
there are only a couple of us on staff who ride.
Jeremy does, and
Jeremy does. He's based in Arizona, and in the past, he's either flown into LA or driven into LA, and then picked up a bike, and then rode it back, and then, you know, it's a big hassle. And you know, truth be told, the motorcycle stuff that we have ran hasn't performed all that well, and that's always sort of what. What dictates what gets published and what doesn't. So there you go.
Yeah, well, also, the guys that do motorcycle stuff, like Hell for Leather, do it really well. So for us to sort of back into it, while we have some bike guys, and I'm sure there's a lot of pretty good bike readers, yeah, I don't know if we're ever going to see that kind of traction with it. Me, personally, I won't touch motorcycles. I enjoy living, although sometimes it seems that I don't. I like being 6 feet up and breathing. And motorcycles, while they fascinate me, and I'm sure I would really enjoy riding them, they are something I have kept at an arm's length on purpose for decades.
Boo.
Yeah, I know.
Yes.
I have found other ways to kill myself.
Listen, it's not about killing yourself. It's you know, listen, I've done the whole down thing. It's an instructional experience. I don't know. There's honestly nothing like being on a motorcycle. There isn't. I've loved cars and driven cars and been obsessed with cars for the majority of my life. But being on a motorcycle is still absolutely exhilarating every time I'm on it. There is no more interesting vehicle than the GPZ that I own, and it's just a bone stock 82 Kawasaki. It's challenging to operate. It requires 100% of your mental focus.
Yeah, see, I do want to... I would love for a way to give myself that sort of man-machine zen experience on a daily basis, where...
I mean, that's totally it. I mean, you crank out 2 or 3 hours on the bike, and you get off, and you're just, I mean, so perfectly clear-headed. You know, you can knock out anything because you've spent the last 3 hours being forced to be absolutely in that moment. You know, there are an infinite number of things trying to kill you on a motorcycle, and it requires a lot of patience and a lot of forethought, you know, to keep yourself from bouncing off the pavement. That's the other thing. It's not the end of the world when you put one down. You know, you can.
It could be.
It could be. I mean, It could be the end of the world when you, you know, hop in your Volvo and drive to work, you know.
This is true. I feel like I'm limiting
my chances. That's 100% true. But, I think
I drive aware, and when I'm in a car, I'm always expecting people to do the stupidest thing they could do, and usually that's what happens. So
it's a lot easier to lure yourself into this belief that what you're doing is somewhat safe in a car. On a motorcycle, you are always keenly aware of just how dangerous what you're doing is. You know, the road is there, the tire from the semi beside you is right there, and there's the only thing between you and it, you know, are a couple of thin layers of leather. So I don't know. Yeah. It's totally worth it. It's, I don't know. I have a hard time imagining a situation where I would give it up.
Yeah. The thing is, I never started.
So. Yeah.
They do fascinate me, and I appreciate a good motorcycle. I at this point I need self-preservation, and I've figured out other ways to do horrible things to my body, so I think falling off a motorcycle is not something I want to add to that list. Alright, so speaking of ways to kill myself, I've discovered that I really like food, and therefore that leads to this question. You guys are always commenting about cars being heavy and how ridiculous that is to you, but at the same time talk about how you yourselves, at least some of you, are overweight. Don't you think that losing 25 pounds yourself would make your car's performance better? I mean, it would be like the car weighing 25 pounds less, which is what you rag on them for all the time. Lead by example, people. 25 pounds does not amount to a hill of beans to an automobile.
You know what it does? A motorcycle.
Yeah, or, okay, a very, very light automobile. You're not going to feel 25 pounds in most cars. Maybe a Lotus 7. But
there is some truth to that. I don't know. I lost almost 17 pounds, I guess, probably about 2 years ago, and I managed to keep that off. And I don't know. It's sort of a point of pride thing. I mean, it sort of happened along the same time as a buddy of mine started riding. We've always been fairly competitive when it comes to that, so you know, figured any little edge could certainly help. So you know,
yeah, it's a constant struggle when you hit middle age. You hit your 30s and your economy gives you, I mean, your economy. Your metabolism gives you the middle finger. And
I hate it when my economy gives me the middle finger. Every day
it's just harder, you know, and food is so good. It's a thing that happens as you you age, you know. You have desk jobs and you don't move as much, and I think honestly we could all be doing more to keep weight down and off. And when we say things like we are fat and stuff like that, some of it is hyperbole. I don't think any of us are like morbidly obese, but you know, again, yeah. All right, it's easier for me to take 25 pounds off than it is for me to shave 40 pounds off the car. Like, fine, okay. You first. That's all I have to say about that.
True.
So, anyway, I think we've killed it. You're tired and angry after your time with Skype, and it is 11:45 this evening, so we should wrap it up and remind everybody that we are brought to you by TireRack.com, the leading online source for tires and so much more, including a large selection of winter tires and summer performance tires, as well as aftermarket wheels, suspension, and brake components, and those items that make it easier to see, like windshield wipers and replacement lighting. No matter what your vehicle, check them out at TireRack.com. We are going to have Matt Edmonds on for a segment very soon from Tire Rack because we want to talk about what's new for the spring, and we'll do a little pre-recorded segment and cut it in. Just wanted to let everybody know he'll be on soon so that we can get the latest dope on the dopest tires. That sounded really bad because I'm old.
Ow. Thanks, Pops.
I tried. Isn't that what the kids are saying these days?
Thanks, Pops.
Yeah. You look at Ustream now like, oh my. Goodness, he did not just try. So anyway, you know where to find us at podcast@autoblog.com, on Twitter, and I'm at Boston Auto, Boston _ Auto. You are at Z _ Bowman, and we are at Autoblog Podcast as well. Drop us a line in any fashion, and we'll be sure to get it. Whether we answer it is a different story, but we will catch up with you next week. Thanks.
Cool.